Blog Talk Radio.
The views and opinions of this show do not reflect the views and opinions of WikiCuriosity Media or its affiliates. WikiCuriosity Media, changing the world you listen to. Any music featured on WikiCuriosity Media Progress is used with the express written consent of the artist, owner, or distributor. Coming to you live from the WikiCuriosity Studios in Knoxville, Tennessee, it's Behind the Screen Radio Show.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another exciting episode of The Cinephiles. I'm Dan.
And I'm Alex.
And you can still join us. All you got to do is call in 718-664-9735. Again, 718-664-9735. That brings you into the studio with us. You can also hit us up on Facebook. Behind the Screen Radio Show. Also, WikiCuriosity Media on the Facebook pages. Also, head on over to the website, www.wickedcuriosity.wixsite.com/WCMedia. We are streaming live on Twitch at Wicked Curiosity Media, so head on over to Twitch and check us out. You can hit up iTunes for all of our archived shows, blogtalkradio.com/WikiCuriosity. And our YouTube channel at Wicked Curiosity Media. Yeah, I think that's pretty much it. Sorry, I'm learning how to run our Twitch feed at the same time as I'm broadcasting tonight. So if I'm stammering a little bit right at the beginning, I apologize. I've got two or three different things going on all at the same time. So. But I think we're good. Although our door to the studio is open. I just got told by the producer that I am, you know, number one. I'm his number one dad. So. Anyway, okay, it's another wonderful Wednesday night.
Yeah.
Again, I do apologize. I was a little off kilter when we first started. I got into the studio 20 minutes before we went on air, and my computer decided that that was a good time for it to reset itself.
Always is.
So, yeah. Yeah. So I literally had a grand total of 5 minutes to get into the studio to get the Twitch stream going. And yeah. Yeah. So I was a little off kilter, as they say. But I'm here, so we're good to go. All right. Alex.
Yes.
Anything interesting happening this week?
Yeah, I guess so. Trying to think, really. I know something interesting happened this week, but I just can't remember. So we finally got it. We've all finally bit the dust on it.
You got the Rona.
I don't.
Oh.
That people know of. but the two other people in my household do. And, you know, and I was giving specific instructions to stay upstairs, stay away, sanitize, be careful.
Yeah.
15 minutes later, I go downstairs and pet my dogs and hang out with them. yeah, that didn't last long. And, you know, I was around them before they even went and got tested and whatnot. And one of them is very concerned for my well-being, but I am fine.
Look, you've got my immune system. You'll be all right.
Yeah. So, other than that.
Doesn't mean you're not going to get it. Just means that, it, you know, you'll get it way less than, you know, a lot of people.
And by this point, if I haven't had it, then the how contagious it is isn't true. Because I've been everywhere, multiple states, multiple cities. No mask, no vax, whatever you want to call it. And I'm fine. So, you know, calling some bluffs there. But
it's so contagious.
Sure.
Yeah.
other than that, not really too much happened.
Yeah, we got it. Last year, back in beginning of September, right after CreepyCon, we got it at CreepyCon. So, yeah. But you know, Miss Angel, she felt a little puny. Had a cough. She lost her, you know, smell and taste and all that. The kids, the two girls got it the worst. Fevers, you know, headache, coughing, and all that stuff. And I got a little bit of a cough, and I lost my sense of smell. Not my sense of taste, but my sense of smell for like a month and a half.
Yeah.
But you know, other than that, I was fine.
Yeah, we didn't really get any of the big symptoms. You know, headache, I guess. Not really headache,
yeah.
Just like stuffy. They're like, let's go get tested. And I went and got tested. One came out big positive. It was like, boom, you got it. The other one was faint. They're handling it like champs. They haven't lost anything. Smell, taste, nothing. Taking it like champs. So.
Well, this new one, from what I understand, so I think it was like Delta and the ones before Delta, that's where you really lost your sense of smell and your sense of taste and stuff like that. But I think that Omicron isn't that bad. So it depends on, like, which variant they got. As to what symptoms they're going to get.
So, I don't know. But they're taking it well. They're doing fine.
Good.
I got the sniffles. One of them's got a really bad cough. Just sniffles, cough. My mom goes, you don't got any, because I've been around them, you know, call me stupid, whatever. I've been around them. She goes, you got any symptoms? I said, well, I've had a head cold for about a month. So call that a symptom. I don't know. Because I've been working out in my garage and whatnot in the cold and stuff. And naturally, I get the sniffles.
Yeah.
Runny nose. No coughing, though. It's just really stuffed up.
Yeah. I mean, it is that time of year.
I've been stuffed up for 18 years, 19 years, so.
You're used to it.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Well,
yeah, that first day, I was like, oh, I can't. My dog was really wanting a pet, but she doesn't like moving. So I'm not coming over there. They're gross. I can't come over there. You got to come to me. You know, she never ended up coming to me. And then the next day, both of them wanted a pet. They both wanted attention. And I was like, well, duty calls. So, yeah, you gotta give dogs some love, especially my dogs. They crave it like it's crack.
I mean, they are needy dogs.
Very, very needy dogs.
So, but there's nothing wrong with that.
No, I love it. They're awesome.
So, I'm trying to think of anything interesting that happened to me this week. Not really a whole lot. Got some new merch in for Wiki Curiosity Media. Some new test merch. Austin, Angel, and I all got zip-up hoodies, which actually turned out really, really nice. It's got the logo on the back, and then on the left side, it's got the logo, small, at the top,
yeah.
And then on the right side, it's got our names. So,
cool.
Yeah, and they're really comfortable. I really like it. And then Austin and I got beanies. Austin loves his, of course. I mean, that kid can't wear a beanie wrong. Mine's a little strange because it's the way that it comes down is it comes down like from the top of the head, it comes down, and then at the bottom it kind of flares out.
Yeah.
Which is weird because I wear my beanie normal, and that's kind of weird for me because it's got all this bunch up top, and I got a small head anyway.
Yeah.
So I just got to figure out how to wear it. So, but yeah, just testing out some new merchandise ideas and stuff for when we can actually start, you know, selling merchandise and everything. So when we start getting a call for it. So, yeah, I can't really think of anything else that happened. No. So, haven't seen today's episode of Book of Boba Fett. So, I'm going to watch that tonight after the show.
It's a good one. I believe it's the finale.
So I get the little taglines on Facebook, you know, that says Boba Fett finale, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I think it is.
Yeah. It was good. It was a good one. I know last week I was kind of messing with you saying, no, nothing big happened. Which of course last week's episode, a lot of shit happened.
Yeah, I was, there were some things that pissed me off about last week's episode, and if tonight is truly the finale, then on one show, either next week or the week after, we're going to have to actually break down the entire Book of Boba Fett and go through it, because there were some things that I did not like, absolutely did not like.
Yeah.
So,
as far as finales for shows go, season finale, series finale, whatever, kind of tame.
Really?
Yeah, kind of tame. I'm not joking or being sarcastic. It was kind of what you expect of the finale. Like, if you could picture the finale right now without seeing it, that's, you know.
Yeah.
It's the finale. It's definitely good. There's some things I was like, what the hell, why, what? Some things I was just, there's really only one big thing that was I was just like, why? Well, two things, I guess. But other than that, it was pretty solid. Kind of a slow-moving finale, in all honesty. But it wasn't a bad episode. Not the slightest.
Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to it, obviously.
Yeah, and I'm sure we'll talk about it after you watch it.
Oh, yeah. I'll text you.
Yeah, because I'm curious to see what you didn't like about last episode. Because that was the...
There was just some things that, and I understand why they did the things that they did.
I think I know what you're talking about, and I got an explanation for it. You just got to watch this last episode.
Okay. So I'll watch this last episode, and then we'll talk about it. And then, I mean, obviously, we're going to talk about it on the show.
Of course.
May even talk about it next week. I don't know.
Probably. Stay tuned next week where we talk about the show, Book of Boba Fett.
Yeah. Good night, everybody. No, I'm kidding. Don't leave. Seriously. No, tonight we've got a fairly interesting show.
One that I'm excited for.
Yeah. Because there's a lot of... So tonight we are going to be talking about war movies. And specifically like historical war movies and stuff like that. I will admit they are not my favorite. It's not my favorite genre to watch. I have seen some that are absolutely fantastic. I've seen some that are just absolutely garbage.
War movies are like a, it's not really a mood thing for me. When I watch one war movie, I immediately want to go and watch another. And then watch another. Doesn't matter what time period, what thing. I just like watching them consecutively. And then I'm burnt out on it. And then I go back and rewatch those movies.
That makes sense.
Because I have like my set of war movies that I'll watch. And then I'll move on from those. I'm trying to get into more of them. There's just... War movies are such an interesting genre.
They can be. It really, honestly, all depends on, like, what time period they're set in.
Yes, and the thing for me is, if a war movie is good, then it's a almost damn near perfect war movie. If a war movie is bad, then it is just garbage. Terrible.
Yeah.
Like, there's
yeah.
no in-between with war movies at all. Like, you can't tell me a war movie, and I'll be like, oh, yeah, that one was okay. No, they're either all fantastic or they're terrible, in my opinion.
Yeah. Like, you can't watch a war movie and be like, yeah, it was okay. You know, I liked these parts about it. I didn't like these parts. You really can't do that because it's really tough to do that way.
Yeah, and there's not really a, like, the standard, I forgot what the word for it was, but it's like that five act or whatever thing where so you got your beginning and then you got your little middle part and you got your climax and then you got your resolution. There's not really that much of that within a war movie because from the start, with most of them, it's nothing but conflict, fighting, boom, 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 pow, bang, boat,
yeah,
explosions. In the end, what does almost every war movie end off with? Fighting, gunfire, explosions. Not that there isn't that structure there, but it's a climax all the way through. There's fighting, there's problems, there's things that you got to solve in the beginning, and there's shit you got to solve in the end.
Yeah.
It's like a climax all the way through.
it's just, it's a very hard genre to kind of really classify, if that makes any sense. Because there's so many different like time periods that you can, because I'm looking through them right now, and I mean, you've got Vietnam, you've got World War II, you've got Iraq, you've got Afghanistan, you've got even as far back as the Revolutionary War, you know, the War of 1812 and all that. And all of these movies kind of, they're all lumped into like the war category. But then, you know, like horror, there are so many different subgenres within the war movie genre.
I see what you mean.
That, I mean, you almost have your pick. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
You could have a war movie and it be a comedy, like Inglourious Basterds.
Yes.
And then you could have a war movie and it be like Hacksaw Ridge. Total drama fest of just amazing acting and pure seriousness.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to classify this, because do you classify Inglourious Basterds as a comedy or a war movie? Because it's technically taking place during World War II. It's not a historical war movie at all.
No.
But it's a war movie.
Right. Yeah. So, and that's the basic premise of tonight's show. Do war movies have to be historically accurate? It's going to be funny when we actually go to video. I just
would like to clarify that I'm not a fan of Texas toast, and I don't like it because of the crust, and I bit down on the crust, and it sucks. So I had to really quick tear off the crust. And it's taking me a while. So
I had to tear the crust off my sandwich.
But before that, this stemmed from a massive argument between me and my buddies.
Okay. Let's about, hear the argument.
About war movies.
Okay.
It's really not an argument, but kind of is.
Debate.
But, yeah, so one of my friends, big war guy. Big war guy. He's going to school for intelligence. He's going to the military right afterwards, trying to get into OCS and whatnot. He's big strategy guy.
Okay.
Absolutely loves the World War II period. Loves it. It's not in like a weird way, because like he understands that that stuff happened, but it's just the stories that are told. Yeah, it's a fascinating period, and he loves it.
And I can agree with him. The World War II, both sides, the Pacific and the Atlantic, it's one of those morbid curiosity, but also, it's very hard to explain. I understand where he's coming from, because that's one of my favorite time periods for these movies.
Yeah, and he watched the movie Fury. And he loves it. He's like, this is one of the best movies of all time. Okay, understandable. And we're all big fans of the movie Fury, too. I'm like, okay,
yeah,
cool.
Good movie. It's a good movie.
And then he goes, but there's one thing that ruins it for me. I'm like, oh, shit, here we go. He's that guy. He's got the different opinion guy.
Yeah.
And he goes, the final, I don't even remember what battle it was. They had a tank battle. And he was like, you know, that was just stupid. That was stupid and completely inaccurate of how they did that. That was stupid. We're like, what? He's like, yeah, you would never fight a tiger tank this way. I don't even know what his problem was with it, but he was just fed up with how they formed the tanks and how the tanks fought. And we're like, it's a movie. He goes, but it's not accurate. We're like, why does it have to be accurate? It's interesting to see. It's a visual representation of a battle. Sometimes in battle, shit goes sideways, and you can't necessarily plan out how you're saying to plan it out.
This is very, very true.
It Bear Grylls, improvise, adapt, overcome.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can't just go into battle and just be like, yo, this is the plan. And then, you know, seven tiger tanks come out of the fucking woods. You know, you're not prepared for that. Then he was like, well, you don't fight a tiger tank head on. Blah, blah, blah. Who cares? It's a movie. Who cares? Who seriously cares? And we were just picking on him and just firing him up. See, big history guy. And he was just fed up with it. You know, I was playing Call of Duty World War II the other day. I would say that for Call of Duty, for video game, it's fantastic. People love that one, the campaign for that one. And I was playing, and it was the tank mission, where you're in a Sherman. It's basically Fury. You're in a Sherman, and you're fighting a tiger tank. And so I'm playing, I'm like, hey, Carson, how do I fight a tiger tank? He goes, you hit it from the back of the side. And he had it right. It was like on the tip of his tongue. He didn't even know I was playing the game. And he had it right there. I was like, you know what? Good on you. Only if them Fury guys did that. And we were all impressed. We were like, it's kind of interesting how he just had that right there. He didn't even know I was playing. I was like, yeah, that's kind of weird. Fury really got him messed up. Really messed him up.
Wow.
And his tactic worked. All my attacks from the front weren't hitting. And as soon as I started going from the side. I mean, in the game, they tell you don't hit it head on, but I was kind of quizzing him. I was like, how do I fight a tiger tank? And he had it right there on the mark. And I was like, all right, fair enough. And then he proceeded to explain to me for a half hour why you can't attack it from the front. And I was done with the mission by then. I was done.
I killed the tiger tank. It doesn't matter.
That's where this whole topic stemmed from is, does it seriously matter if it's accurate or not? Because you take a movie like Inglourious Basterds, it's not accurate at all, whatsoever. It's still a great film.
Yeah. So the way I look at it, it really honestly all depends. We all know that Hollywood movies are going to embellish a little bit or a lot when it comes to movies about real life situations. There are war movies that are way more accurate than most. If we look at the movie 1917, and I don't know if you've seen it.
No, I really want to watch it though.
So coming from a guy that's not a big war movie fan, it is definitely one that you need to see. The way that it was shot, so it's one continuous shot.
Yeah.
Like there is no break in the camera. It is one continuous shot following one person to deliver a message. And it's beautifully well done. I think, if I'm not mistaken, it might have been based on a true story. Or roughly based on true historic facts. Maybe not one person's story. But, you know, historical facts of, because 1917 obviously is World War One, and, you know, they didn't have, you know, radios for everybody. You couldn't radio, you know, this outpost and that outpost and this person to,
yeah,
you know, for that. So you had runners. And that's basically what this story is about. It's basically the cameras following one runner from one side of the battlefield to the other to make sure that, you know, the enemy doesn't kill the good guys
yeah.
from the story. So there's a lot of historical accuracies in there. Did they take a little bit of liberties? Obviously. I mean, they're going to. Just to make the action a little more... what's the word I'm looking for?
Sad.
To make it... Yeah, exactly. A little more action-y. You know?
Yeah.
Make it a little more exciting. But that is one of the most, you know, historical war movies out there. Now, if we look at movies like Good Morning Vietnam, which is about the Vietnam War, that movie is probably way less accurate than most.
Yeah.
Because it's not based on... actually, I think Good Morning Vietnam might be based on a real disc jockey. We'll take your example, Inglourious Basterds.
Mm-hmm.
Probably a lot less accurate than like 1917 or even Saving Private Ryan would have been.
Yeah.
You know, it's set in a certain time period. It's set in World War II, so they're going to have some historical accuracies. But it's literally just a story.
Yeah, I think the thing is the goal of the war movie. Is the goal to be an entertaining film? Or is it to be a basically documentary? Telling facts and telling stories from that time period, just modernizing it so we can digest it better.
Right.
The thing is like Saving Private Ryan. D-Day.
Yeah.
I would say fairly, without being there, because of course I wasn't there. It's accurate. If you hear stories from vets or read stories from vets and people describing D-Day, there you go. Boom.
So,
visualization.
Real quick fun fact about Saving Private Ryan. There were actually vets, World War II vets, that watched Saving Private Ryan that had been through D-Day. And they actually had a very hard time watching that portion of the film because of how historically accurate it was.
Yeah. So, and the objective for Saving Private Ryan wasn't to be a historic, one-to-one historical accurate movie. It was literally telling a story of this group of soldiers storming Normandy and then trying to get to a guy named Private Ryan, get him a message, and saving him, apparently. I've watched the movie once, twice.
So the whole premise of Saving Private Ryan...
There wasn't a big push for... The main goal wasn't historical accuracy. It was storytelling, how to tell a story, how to tell a story right, historical accuracy.
So I'm actually going to correct you on that. Because, I want to get my... Want to get my facts straight here real quick, so I'm going to look this up. So, Saving Private Ryan is actually loosely based on true events.
Right.
I didn't know if you knew that or not. Basically, what they were trying to do is, so during World War II, I was right. Okay. I just wanted to make sure of the director. So during World War II, of course, you know, we had the draft and everything. There was a law that if three brothers went to war and two out of the three were killed, the third one was pulled from the battlefield and sent home so that the family name could be carried on. That's what Saving Private Ryan was all about, was Tom Hanks' group of soldiers was going to literally save Private Ryan so that they can get him off the battlefield and get him home so that he can you know, because he was the last brother. And so that he can, you know, carry on the family name. And Steven Spielberg, who was the director, that's what I was trying to, you know, just verify. He was actually going for historical accuracy in the movie.
Right.
So,
with the story or with the, like, guns that were used with the uniforms with... Because I think there's a difference there. If he takes a historical accuracy for equipment and how things operate and whatnot versus the story, because the story, I'm sure, is loosely based. You know, the what I'm saying is the story was the most important factor when making that movie. The story was number one.
Right.
I had to tell that
yeah.
story right. Going hand in hand with that, getting the accuracies right within that world so people can get involved and immersed into that world to tell the story right. So, yeah. Saving Private Ryan wasn't a historical documentary. It just
right.
had a large number of historical accuracies.
Right. Before we go any further, I want to welcome Miss Angel to the studio.
Hello.
In case you missed it, we're talking about the relevance of historical accuracies within war movies. So that argument can be used for pretty much any war movie based on an actual historic war.
Yeah.
You want to get, you know, the uniforms correct. You want to get the equipment correct. I mean, you're not going to have, you know, an M16 in World War II.
Yeah. So,
you
the,
know?
The one example we could use is Fury. Does it really matter that tank formation or whatever, does that matter within the movie? It is historically inaccurate. They would not, in that way that they did. But is Fury really a historical documentary? No.
No. I mean, it is, again, I think it's one of those that's based on historical events.
Yeah. I'd put it in, like, the same category as Saving Private Ryan.
Right. Yeah, obviously. So,
it's based in World War II. It's a World War II movie. I think the only accuracies you have to worry about, what tanks you're using, what guns you're using, what equipment you're using.
What uniforms.
Does how they attack, does tactics go into that? Me personally,
so,
if it was a problem throughout the whole movie, I think it would make... It would be a problem for that movie. Like, they should have done more research on that. But this is one battle within the movie. I think this is one of the last battles.
So. It's been a long time since I've seen Fury.
And it was literally that one battle that was inaccurate. To me, that's not such a big problem. If 95% of the movie was accurate, that last 5-10% doesn't really matter to me. You know, as long as they're not shooting laser missiles out of the tanks, go for it. You know, at that point, just call it Star Wars Fury. Yeah.
So I'm actually going to try to explain the battle. Again, we're looking at World War II. We're looking at limitations in communications. Even though between World War I and World War II, we do have, you know, that explosion of technology. That always happens after war, during war. But not everybody had access to communication equipment. I mean, we see that all the way up through Vietnam and Desert Storm, where communication equipment, you know, was not 100% readily available. You know, Desert Storm is where we start to get, you know, more access to communication equipment. And then, you know, Iraq and Afghanistan, everybody can communicate with everybody.
Yeah.
But when we look at the Battle of Fury, the battle within Fury, we don't know 100% that the Allies knew how to fight the Tiger Tanks. We don't know that they've been given that intel, that information. And let's be honest, when you're, you know, rolling through in a tank and you see an enemy tank, you're not going to be like, oh, no, I'm not going to fire on them because I got to get on the side or I got to get on the back. You're going to immediately fire on them because you're going to want to stop them in some shape or form. You know, I mean, eventually, and you can correct me if I'm wrong because I've only seen the movie once and I don't remember a whole lot of it.
Yeah. It was also the target placement. Like, they were shooting tanks. They should have been shooting tanks from the back and then forward and then trapping, and they weren't doing that. It was inaccuracies on the Axis side and on the ally side. Like, that whole battle was just all kinds of wacky. But the battle was fought, and it was in the movie.
Right. But, like you said, in the heat of battle, sometimes your tactics and your logistics kind of go a little wonky. You know, stress level is up. You're trying not to die. You know, and you're going to fire on your enemy as often as you can.
Yeah.
However you hit them, that is the goal of war, is to stop and kill the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
You want to do it as quickly and efficiently as you possibly can, but again, in the heat of battle, you're not always going to have that, you know, thinking in your head, oh no, I gotta move, because if you move, then you expose your side, and now you're dead. So you want to put your best foot forward. And while they're putting their best foot forward, you're trying to wear them down.
Yeah. So, yeah, to me, Fury doesn't really matter that it's accurate. It was an interesting movie.
Yeah.
So, I mean, looking for a World War II movie, there you go. If you don't care about historical inaccuracies to the whatever.
To the letter, yeah.
Yeah, you don't. Watch it. A problem I heard, there was a lot of, I feel like this issue comes up a lot with World War II movies, the historical inaccuracies and whatnot. One that, you know, is deserving to come up in conversation is Hacksaw Ridge. I don't know if you've seen it or not.
It is a fabulous movie. It has been forever since I've seen Hacksaw Ridge.
Yeah, but not only are there, I wouldn't say there's historical inaccuracies, but there's a lot of fluff within the movie. And it's based off of a true story, true events.
Right.
But there's a lot of dramatic fluff within the movie. To make the movie interesting, of course. You kind of have to do that.
Right.
Again, I don't think it matters all that much. Still a fantastic movie. I think it got an Oscar nomination. Or some kind of award nomination. But yeah. Freaking fantastic movie. Is it realistic? Not really.
So one of the things that I've noticed when we talk about war movies and we talk about these types of movies, is it's really how the director wants to portray the movie. You know,
yeah.
Let's take two World War II movies, for example. We've got Saving Private Ryan over here, which, you know, Steven Spielberg wants to be as accurate as he absolutely can. He's going to fluff the story a little bit, to make it more entertaining, but he wants to be as accurate as he can. And then over here on this side, you've got Inglourious Basterds, where Quentin Tarantino, who is a fabulous director, he's going to put the historical accuracies in the movie where he can to make, to set the movie in the time period.
Yeah.
But it's a fantastical type story set in the time period. And that's what it is. You know,
yeah.
It's about this Jewish girl who escapes the Nazis, goes to France, starts her own movie theater business, and becomes part of the quote-unquote part of the French Resistance. It's
yeah.
also about this group of American soldiers that have basically been given, you know, complete leeway to kill Nazis however they want. Now, is the first part historically accurate? Very loosely. I mean, there were plenty of Jews that escaped Nazi Germany and, you know, were able to get into other countries, able to get into France, able to get into Spain, get into Italy, not Italy, but like France and Spain, and, you know, hook up with resistance movements and the Allies and stuff like that to help fight the war.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did we have covert, or maybe not so covert, but did we have groups of soldiers that were told, hey, go kill Nazis however you want? Probably not.
Yeah, if they had those group of soldiers back then, we probably would have lost. 'Cause the battles, I could be wrong, battles in World War II are not fought like they were in Afghanistan.
No.
World War II,
no.
Shit ton of tanks, miles long of frontline defenses, and it's one line of defense and one line of defense or offense or whatever you want to call it, shooting at each other for months. It's basically sieges.
To a point, it was just coming out of World War One, which was all about trench warfare. That's
yeah.
what World War One was.
Yeah, we didn't have these like small group of kind of renegade soldiers that went off into the woods, did their own thing, scalping Nazis. That's not what happened.
No.
Those kind of soldiers were in a bigger group of soldiers that went out and killed Nazis or got killed by Nazis.
I mean, we had covert operations that went on. And that's kind of where, you know, we get the special forces groups that came up that were very prevalent in both Korea and Vietnam, and then, you know, of course, throughout Iraq and Afghanistan, you know, and other skirmishes around the world. But we didn't have one lieutenant that, you know, had a group of soldiers that was like, hey, I want my Nazi scalps. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, I absolutely love the movie. It is one of my favorite Quentin Tarantino movies. I could watch that movie over and over and over again. I absolutely love that movie. Is it historically accurate? Absolutely not.
Does that make it a worse movie than Saving Private Ryan or Hacksaw Ridge?
Absolutely not.
Because there we go.
going into the movie, I know what I'm expecting. Because I know the director, I know the story, I know what I'm expecting. If I'm
right.
watching...
If you hear World War II movies coming out, Vietnam War movies coming out, is your first immediate thought is, oh man, if this isn't historically accurate, it's going to be a shit movie. For me, no, because, perfect example. The Kingsman.
Yeah.
Came out this year.
Oh, see, I haven't seen that yet.
It was the prequel, explaining how the
right.
Kingsman secret agency came about.
Right.
Without spoilers, I heard Yeah, it's a World War One movie. It's got Voldemort in it. You want to watch it? Well, sure. It should be interesting. And you watch it. Little tad spoiler. It's not historically accurate at all.
I mean, obviously.
Not one bit it's not. It's still better than most war movies, in my opinion. And it's one of my favorite movies of all time. And it's good. It's not historically accurate at all. But it's got emotion. It's got action. It's got comedy. It's got it all.
The thing
but
is,
it's not historically accurate.
Right.
That's all. It's got little, like, again, it's like Inglourious Basterds. It sets you in that time period. I would say it's a bit more historically accurate than Inglourious Basterds. Because that kind of just rewrote history. This sort of did too, but in a cool way. But yeah, I mean, I don't think it matters all that much. Unless you're a total history buff, then go watch a documentary on the History Channel.
Yeah.
Go watch World War II in color.
The thing is you really have to know what kind of movie you're going into. And you have to kind of expect what the movie is portraying. And the best way to do that, honestly, is look at the director. When we look at, like, Apocalypse Now, which is a Vietnam War, and we look at movies like Apocalypse Now, Platoon, Bridge on the River Kwai, and stuff like that, we know that those directors, and again, I've got so many directors running through my head. I want to make sure that this is the correct director before I say it. Yes. Okay. I was right. Second time. If we look at the movie Apocalypse Now, and I don't know if you've ever seen it, Alex. It is a fantastic movie about Vietnam, done in 1979. It's got Martin Sheen, Marlon Brando, and Robert Duvall in it, written and directed by Francis Ford Coppola, who is just a phenomenal director. That movie is historically accurate. And you got to know what you're going into and what to expect.
Yeah.
So. Okay. Because you can't go into a movie like Good Morning Vietnam or Inglourious Basterds and or The Kingsman and expect them to be completely historically accurate.
I think that can be said for all of them. You can't go into a movie, period movie, and expect everything about that time period movie to be accurate to that time period. I know you would like it to be. I would like it to be. That'd be awfully cool. But some things you just can't. It makes for a boring movie. If they made a movie about World War II right now, I guarantee you, if it was perfectly historically accurate to the T, nobody would watch it. Nobody would give a shit. You know why? Because they've done it like 7,000 times on the History Channel. You're just watching a documentary at that point. When you bring out a movie with big actors like Tom Hanks, he's in a World War II movie. They're like, oh, man, this is going to be weird. It's going to be interesting how they do this. And then when it's that historically accurate, you're kind of like, oh, wow. It's got that balance of fluff and accuracy.
Yeah. But then you get movies like Schindler's List. And we can't go through the show without bringing up Schindler's List.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
I watched it once a very long time ago. I want to watch it again just to refresh my memory. But Schindler's List is probably one of the most historically accurate World War II movies that that you're going to find out there. And it is...
This one's also got Voldemort in it. Ralph Fiennes. I love him as an actor. You know, he really sold me in The King's Man. Because before that, I'd watched him in Harry Potter. It's like, wow, that's a good performance. And then
yeah.
I was like, I kind of want to know him more than just Voldemort. And he was in The King's Man, and he's got me hooked. He's one of my favorite actors. Love him. So I'm going to have to watch Schindler's List.
Yeah. He's actually a really good actor.
Yeah.
He's
fantastic.
Yeah. But, you know, it's one of the – and it's honestly one of the hardest movies to watch just because of the content. But it is one of the most historically accurate movies that you can watch out there, you know. So if you're looking for historical movies, again, or more historically correct movies, you've got to look at the director. You've got to look at the story. And there's going to be inaccuracies in any movie. Literally, any movie that you watch, there's going to be inaccuracies all over the place. Whether they're small, little, you know, this person was holding a gun in this scene and now they're not. You know, to, oh my God, they would not attack a tiger tank in that way.
Yeah.
You know, to, no, they didn't have these little covert groups going and scalping Nazis. But you really have to pick and choose, basically pick and choose your battles as to what you want to see.
Yeah. To move forward, because there's some things that I believe have a hand in this.
Okay.
Modern war movies. I'm talking from about 2000 to now. That take place from 2000 to now.
Okay.
This may seem a bit hypocritical, but should people be making historically accurate movies about what happens today? Because of, I guess, the sensitivity of certain, like, veterans and whatnot. And this is definitely a silly question, and I just thought of it. But, like, we make World War II movies. There's very few World War II vets out there anymore.
Right.
We can now tell those stories of what happened in those wars.
Right.
But when we have movies that take place now, there's thousands, hundreds of thousands of vets from now that then people watch those movies and then they go and ask those vets, did you really do that over there? Did this happen? Did that happen over there? And then I think it may be a bit insensitive to do that, but at the same time, do they deserve to have those stories told as well? Get that same chance to have their stories told that the Vietnam and World War II vets got. Because I know some vets out there don't like those stories being told and would rather it just be locked away. What happens in, basically what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, sort of thing.
Right, right. So I'm going to speak on a couple things. Number one, I'm going to go ahead and speak as a vet. I did deploy twice to Afghanistan. I did not see as much as others did. But I saw some. So, again, it all goes back to the type of movie you're making. Two that I can point out specifically, we look at Lone Survivor and American Sniper. I'll be honest, I've never seen American Sniper. Not that I don't have respect for Chris Kyle. I have massive respect.
Who was in that movie?
Bradley Cooper.
Yeah, Bradley Cooper played Chris Kyle.
There's a lot of weird things that go behind American Sniper. Because when I went and saw it, I went and saw it with my mother and my best friend. We went and saw it, and it was very captivating. Yeah. And very, like, you know, puts you in that world sort of thing. No disrespect. I'm not coming from a place of disrespect. I'm coming from a place of curiosity and what I've been told.
Right.
Chris Kyle may have fluffed his own story, and I think he was taken to court for it and lost the court case. Nonetheless, the movie is still an interesting movie. It's just some people don't think the movie should have been made, I guess.
So I have some personal issues with the movie. And when I say personal issues, I'm not talking about, I was over in Afghanistan and I don't want to see that. There are issues that I find there are issues with the movie, there are issues with the story that I don't like. And that's one of the reasons why I won't watch, and I'm not going to go into them on the air because you know, I absolutely will not disrespect, you know, a decorated veteran and his family and stuff like that.
Right.
There's just
what happened
with views that I have.
And stuff,
yeah.
But
yeah. But
what's done is done.
To watch American Sniper. Now I have seen Lone Survivor.
See, that's the one I haven't seen.
Now, so Lone Survivor, it's a true story. Oh goodness, I can't remember the guy's name that it's about. Let me, because he actually had a hand in making the movie.
I have seen that movie. I was thinking of a different movie.
Marcus Luttrell. That's the guy. That's the guy that it's based on. And one of the things that I really like about Lone Survivor is, number one, Marcus Luttrell had a hand in, you know, making the movie. Facts were checked and stuff like that. But also that, so there was a movie that came out, oh God, years ago, called Range 15. It was a veteran made movie, veteran produced, veteran, funded and all that. That had Marcus Luttrell in it. And, they made fun of him about the movie. I don't have to have Mark Wahlberg starring as me in a movie or something like that. And it was funny. It was a quick little rib, and you know, I think he actually wrote that in there.
Yeah, it's Army guys, you know, poking fun with Army guys. It's all just, you know, jokes and fun.
It's military people giving military people shit. That's what, you know, it's what we do. But Lone Survivor is, again, it's one of those more historically accurate movies that are out there. And, you know, at the end, it tells about the Afghani that helped him and, you know, his story after the fact and stuff like that. And it was just it was such a riveting movie. Because of the time period that it took place. You know, I can relate to it more because I can understand, if that makes any sense. And to me, I honestly think it can go both ways. Go back to your original question. Is it insensitive to make historically inaccurate movies about, like, the Afghan War and Iraq? I'll even go back as far as, like, Desert Storm, because we do have inaccurate movies about Desert Storm, and Three Kings is completely inaccurate. There are so many inaccuracies about that movie that I can point out. But it was entertaining.
Yeah.
So for me, it doesn't matter either way. I love a good movie. You know, I'm not going to sit there and be like, oh, well, you know, that's not how, you know, that's not how they would have done this maneuver, or, you know, that's not how they would have attacked this village or these people, or that's not how the Afghanis would have attacked. Simply because that ruins the movie, not only for me, but for the viewers that I'm sitting next to. You know, it's I don't know. What's your opinion, Miss Angel? You've been sitting here for, you know, a good 15, 20 minutes.
What is my opinion on what?
Okay. Go ahead.
So anyway, I would like to bring up a movie that I watched and that my stepdad has watched.
We'll get back to you.
Okay. He's also an Army veteran. And we both watched it without knowing each other watched it. Because I was in one of those moods one day. I was like, I'm going to watch a war movie. And I watched, I went on Netflix and literally war. That's what I got a list of movies. And I watched like two or three of them. One of them was The Outpost. Based on a true story, I believe. It's got Orlando Bloom in it. A couple other actors, I can't remember their name. I think Casey Affleck's in it. Ben Affleck's younger brother. I think he's in it. Yeah, and I watched it. Freaking phenomenal. If I could take a movie from this time period and compare it to one of the best movies from the World War II time period, I would compare The Outpost to maybe Saving Private Ryan, or I would compare it to that. This is far more realistic and far more accurate than Saving Private Ryan, though. This is basically a documentary with high-paid actors. And I watched it, and I brought it up. I was like, hey, I watched this movie. I was wondering if you have heard of it. And he goes, well, yeah, I watched it. I was bored one day, and I watched it. And I was like, okay, what do you think? He goes, yeah, that's pretty much what happened. that's how things go over there. I was like, okay, well, it's good to know. And then I watched Sandcastle, Nicholas Holt. I don't think he watched it. It was good, but at the same time, kind of strange. I would say it's accurate. It had that same feeling that The Outpost did, but I like The Outpost more.
Okay.
So, yeah, the Sandcastle is about a guy in the Army who doesn't want to be in the Army no more. He got orders from higher-up people saying basically he's going to go into battle. Or he don't want to do that. He got scared, which is reasonable. That's just scary. And he finds different ways to try to get kicked out and whatnot, honorably discharged, not dishonorably. He tries to find ways to get out. Through injury, through mental, whatever, and he tries to find a way to get out. Well, that doesn't work because they don't give a shit, and they send him in anyway. Basically, some stuff happens. Some cool guy shit happens, and he gets taken from that place and gets put in the sandcastle. And that place is very dangerous. Again, who wants to go there? And they were right not to go there. Because some shit happens, and boom. And I don't really remember the ending of that one. But yeah, that's basically what happens.
Okay.
It's basically about a guy who gets stuck in positions that he does not want to be in, that nobody wants to be in. And he's always getting put in bad positions.
Okay.
Whichever
that
is.
I'll be honest.
I guess.
Yeah. I'll be honest, I haven't seen either one of those movies.
I would recommend Sandcastle to you. The Outpost I would recommend, but with warning, it's very graphic and very realistic.
Okay.
Not just physically graphic, but it shows the mental side of things, too.
Okay.
Oh, I forgot to mention, the outpost is a base that's surrounded by mountains. Yeah, it's basically a death trap. And it's hard to get supplies there and whatnot.
Yeah.
Very good movie.
Trying to say that I think those of us who have, who are currently or have been part of a active military family, I think all of us look at war movies completely differently than just the general public. Especially like for me,
right?
When it's a movie about, say, current, like Chris Kyle, those are current movies. They're very emotional. It's very emotional to watch. I didn't watch them for a long time, and I never watched anything while you were deployed.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't handle it. But I think we see things differently. There's an emotional connection to those movies. Maybe not so much like World War I, World War II. We understand it maybe and empathize a little differently. But when we look at movies that are more current, it is definitely more emotional for the soldier and their family to watch.
Yeah. I don't know. As looking at it from a child perspective, well, I feel like I had – me and my siblings had a different-ish childhood. But it was interesting. I had two people deploying at the same time sometimes, two father figures. And whenever I was a child, it was, like, sad. I was like, oh, shit, they're both gone. They went and do stuff. But as like my stepdad likes to say, cool guy shit. He calls all the Special Forces guys and like the Rangers and whatnot. They're doing cool guy shit.
Yeah.
And that's how I always thought of it. I didn't know what was going on. I just knew cool guy shit's going on. So I watched those movies like, hell yeah, they're kicking ass over there. And I was like so enthralled with it. I played every Call of Duty just to immerse myself, just be like, this is cool guy shit. And then growing up, I was like, oh, maybe it's not so cool. It's not so cool. But at the same time, it's still cool guy shit to me. It's just not so cool to maybe you and him. But then when you see it in a movie like American Sniper, I was a bit younger when American Sniper came out. I was like, hell yeah, American Sniper. We're going to see SEALs and stuff. Cool guy shit. And we watched it. That was like my first, like, oh, that's cool guy shit. Oh, shit.
Yeah.
That was my first awakening to cool guy shit. Kind of sickening a little bit. But kind of turned your stomach just a little bit. And then that movie theater was quiet. We saw it in theaters. It was so quiet. You could hear a pin drop. Nobody said a word coming out. Nobody said a word to the car. When we got in the car, I was like, that was cool. My mom was like, sure thing, Alex. But yeah, it's just different perspectives for different people. Like, you would see American Sniper in a different light than me because I didn't do that stuff.
Right. I didn't do cool guy shit like that. My experiences were different.
Yeah.
And
everybody's experiences are always different. But when you're when you're not told as a child what people do over there, and then you see it in a movie or a video game, you just kind of assume that's what's going on. Like, to me, everybody was a Special Forces guy. I was like, America? Yeah, we're all Navy SEALs over here.
We're all Special Forces.
And then you get older and you realize, like, oh, man, that's not how things work. It's not how things work in the Army.
Yeah.
Or the Navy or whatever.
Yeah. No, we don't all get to do cool guy shit. So sometimes some of us have to clean up after the cool guy shit.
Yeah. So. Everything's appreciated. Whether you do cool guy shit or not, I appreciate you.
Thank you. So there's a subcategory of like war movies that I kind of want to get into. And there's one specifically that I think of. And those are like what if war movies.
Okay. I think, okay.
I can
think of a few.
So one in particular that I, that's actually one of my favorite movies from the time period, is Red Dawn. The original Red Dawn.
I was thinking the same thing.
The original Red Dawn, not the shitty remake that they tried to do.
I've only seen the remake.
Oh God, the original. Yes, it is a little dated, but it is way better. It is way better because it was made in the 80s, during the time of the Cold War, and it was Russians coming over and invading the West Coast.
Yeah.
You
know, I just thought of something, not to go off track. We forgot a very, very awesome and pivotal movie that could totally flip our argument. Maybe.
Okay.
Full Metal Jacket.
Oh.
Because, see, there's a bunch of YouTube videos. I don't know if you've ever seen these, but I think GQ does them. I'm not sure who does them. But they do videos. They bring on somebody from the service. Like, they'll bring on a Navy SEAL, and he'll break down movies like American Sniper, 12 Strong, Jarhead. They'll break down those movies and pick out what's accurate and what's not. And half the time, they're like, yeah, that's accurate. It's not. And I don't think they give their opinion on whether they care if it's accurate or not. But
yeah.
They bring them on and say, they break down what happens in the movie. And they'll take certain scenes. They'll say, well, they necessarily wouldn't do this. So it's not uncommon to see this, blah, 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 blah. Full Metal Jacket, Vietnam era movie.
Okay.
One of my favorite movies. I love the movie.
Oh, it's one of my favorite. I love it.
I would say, not having gone through boot camp, not seeing Vietnam battle, I'd say it's pretty accurate. They got it's like the Fury. They got the historical things right to put you in that period.
So the boot camp scene. And I'm going to preface this with saying that my brother made me watch this movie a week or two before I went to boot camp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't – it was a while where I thought Full Metal Jacket was just the boot camp. Because I watched till the boot camp, and I didn't see what happened after that. For the longest time, I never saw that second half of that movie. I never have. I have, but – there was a time where I didn't see the second half of that movie.
Yeah.
I didn't understand the jokes people were saying from that second half of the movie. I was like, it's a completely different movie, guys.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, because I only saw the first boot camp part.
Yeah.
And then I went back and watched the whole movie. I was like, wow, that movie is long as shit, but it's so funny.
You got Girlfriend Vietnam?
Yeah. But yeah, it was a good movie.
So
I'd say it has that balance of fluff and accuracy to make it interesting. I wouldn't put it in the Inglourious Basterds, though, because I feel like it's historically accurate enough to go in the category of Saving Private Ryan, Hacksaw Ridge, Fury. But it's a comedy. You could honestly make a five-way Venn diagram with these.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So the fun fact about Full Metal Jacket. So, Arlie Ermey was, because he's been in other movies before. He was in Bridge on the River Kwai and one other one before Full Metal Jacket. But he was actually brought on as a consultant. Stanley Kubrick brought him in as a consultant for the boot camp scene because he used to be, you know, a Marine drill sergeant. And he was actually better than the actor that they had.
Mm-hmm.
So
naturally,
they just, you know, yeah, obviously. So they just put him in the movie. You know, they were like, "Hey, you're doing way better than he is. Why don't we just cast you over here, and you can, you know, yell at them and berate them, and you know, I'm sure." I can't even say that, you know, some of the boot camp scenes were fluff, because I'm sure that's actually how camp went in that time period. You know, because they were allowed to hit you in boot camp. They were allowed to cuss at you and basically make you feel like the smallest piece of shit, so that they can build you up to be strong, because 99 out of 100 times, you were going to Vietnam straight out of boot camp. You go to boot camp, you go to your school, you'd go to Vietnam. That's the way it was back then, when they had to make you tough. You know? So... And then, you know, of course, after that, I would say it's actually fairly historically accurate from, you know, the knowledge that I have and other movies that I've seen and documentaries that I've seen and stuff like that. I would say it's, I mean, there's going to be fluff, obviously, but I would say it's fairly historically accurate.
Yeah.
So. Okay. I want to get into movies that are not necessarily about actual wars that happened, or that were like hyper embellished. One of the ones, we were talking about wars that could be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What if?
Yeah. Like Red Dawn. You need to see the original. It is 10 times better than the remake. But is there, so the question is there a way to make what if wars historically accurate? Miss Angel,
what's that?
Is there a way to make what if wars, like the movie Red Dawn, is there a way to make those, even though they're fantasy movies, obviously, is there a way to make them historically accurate?
I don't know. I guess was it a historical movie, or was it in the times?
Well, the example that I'm giving is Red Dawn.
Right.
Yeah, you know, that's
but
the
that
best
was
example.
Supposed to be like a current situation.
Right.
So I think either way, using people that have been in that situation, soldiers, drill sergeants, whatever, people that have actual knowledge of the workings of how war happens.
Right.
Is how you make it accurate.
Okay.
Yeah. So. I remember watching a video about the original Red Dawn, and historical accuracies weren't the problem. Those technical accuracies. I think there was an M60 in the movie that wasn't even a thing. Like, it was an M60, but it was modified in ways that wasn't an M60 and wouldn't have made the gun fire, or it was a PKM or something. I don't know, some big machine gun, and it was completely wrong. Like, the Russians would have never used that gun, because I think it was a Chinese-made weapon. And then, because the restrictions in the 80s, you couldn't have certain things, certain props couldn't be made certain ways, so the Russians in that movie were carrying Chinese-made? Some different kind of country-made weapons weren't Russian.
Right.
Because you couldn't, it was made in that Cold War period, and it was a big security factor in the United States. And you couldn't use some things. But it was still, like, the visual things were there. But, yeah, you know, it's like the AK-47 has been made by 4,000 different countries by now, and they just used the one that wasn't Russian because they weren't able to.
Right.
And those people, some people just nitpick those little inaccuracies. But, I mean, if it looks like it, it looks like it. As long as Russians aren't carrying around M16s and, you know, bullpup rifles, go for it. You know, to make it, it depends. If you're going to make, like, a what-if war set in 1952, then use 1952 things in the movie. Don't have somebody strolling around in a modern AR-15 and say, oh, it's 1952. No, because it's not. Wasn't made yet. There are ways you can make what-if wars accurate. It just depends on what time you put it in. If you made a movie now, like a what-if movie, what-if war movie now, shit, you could go all out. You could use whatever gun you want.
Yeah.
It's just got to work. It's got to be practical. Like, if you have a what-if war between China and America, the Chinese people, Chinese army, isn't going to be running around with MP40s that the Nazis use, you know, and they'll
right.
use their things. I think that's really the only thing that matters, is having it be technically accurate, not historically accurate.
Okay. So, second part to that, do they need to be, and Miss Angel, you can weigh on this too, do they need to be believable to be entertaining?
No.
No,
because I don't think a lot of people, I think there are a lot of people who know nothing about, one, history, two, wars, three, how the military works.
I think to a certain extent.
Like, what-if wars.
Even what-if wars. I mean, we see a lot more veterans looking at technical inaccuracies
right.
than normal people. We don't care. We're just watching the movie.
Okay.
Are you saying
that
like the premise?
It's only supposed to shoot five? I don't care.
What do you mean by believable?
So if we take Red Dawn, for instance.
Like, would Russia really invade America sort of thing?
No, I'm not even talking about that, because, I mean, there's always the possibility.
Yeah.
You know,
I think that goes into the, like, we can't have a what-if war between, like, the U.S., and then have, I don't know, Italy invade the U.S. That's not a what-if war that's believable.
Right.
That would be unentertaining and then kind of be weird. But if you had a what-if war of U.S. invading Russia or Russia invading U.S. or two enemies, quote-unquote enemies, that are believable enemies.
Of the same military strength.
Yeah. Cause
yeah.
Somalia is not invading America anytime soon without the backing of some other country. I'm just, we could take Somalia out with this. We could take Somalia out with a state of West Virginia. Let's be honest. With the civilians of West Virginia, we could take out the country of Somalia without the backing of any other superpower. But it's just got to be believable. That would be a believable war. A bunch of West Virginia Hicks and hillbillies strolling out to Somalia. Yeah, that's believable. But if you had the core of, like, the entire United States is just like, yeah, well, we don't like Somalia now. Let's invade. This is new United States. It's not believable, because why would we go there? It makes no sense.
So when I say believability,
I wanted Quentin Tarantino to make a movie about that now. Somebody's got to get that to him. West Virginia civilians invading Somalia.
Oh, my
I want
God.
That to be, I want that to be a Quentin Tarantino movie.
Oh, my God.
I want to see that.
That would be hilarious. But now, when I say believability, I'm meaning, like, a group of kids basically, like,
Yeah, I see what you mean. A bunch of high schoolers fighting off the Russian military.
Yeah.
No.
Or the Chinese military.
Yeah, no, that's not happening.
Does it have
First
to
of all,
be...
Where's our military? Why are we using high school students?
Right.
That's a big question. Why wouldn't we just use our own military? Made up of high school students, because it's a draft. It's going to be a lot of high schoolers, or with that age range. But yeah, straight out of high school, or like not even kids that have shot machine guns before. No, that's not believable, but it's entertaining.
But in all...
shows the American strength.
Yeah.
In all honesty, a message for all the enemy countries out there, our high schoolers are deadly accurate with an M16, I'm just saying.
And that was the basic premise of Red Dawn. You know,
whatever stereotype you've heard about America, it's true. All of them.
So, again, you know, in the 80s, there was always the threat of World War III. That's what, you know, that's why it was the Cold War. And there was always the quote-unquote threat of, you know, Russia invading the West Coast. And basically, the movie was, you know, made to, number one, bolster American pride, and to kind of be like, you know, yeah, fuck you, because our let's be honest, let's be 100% honest. Our civilian population here in the U.S. is more well armed, has more.
Do you think that's the result of Red Dawn? People saw Patrick. People saw Patrick Swayze with an AR-15 is like, I'm that guy.
Nobody puts baby in a corner. if you look at the populace that has
wear
the most guns,
pants and have a mullet, nothing's changed.
Actually,
we still wear tight pants and have mullets.
you actually hit on something, because if you look at the populace that has the most guns per person, it is Gen Xers. Like, we literally lived with the threat of invasion our entire childhood. We are now adults. We are going to fucking defend ourselves.
Yeah, I'm just saying, you guys saw Patrick Swayze in some tight-ass pants and with an AR-15. It was like, I need one of those. Everybody got mullets and tight pants after that. You get a mullet and tight pants with every AR-15 purchase.
Look, I'm Patrick Swayze with my fucking MMP-22, bitches. Bring it. But if you look,
Russia's scared of Patrick Swayze. Where's Patrick Swayze when you need him?
He's dead.
I know, that's why I said, where is he when you need him? If he's still around, we'd be the number one global superpower again.
Just put a pair of tight pants, a mullet, and an AR-15.
You know,
he
died in 2009. That's when shit hit the fan for the United States. That's when things went wrong. It's all Patrick Swayze.
It's all Patrick Swayze's fault.
Where's the next guy with the tight pants and mullet?
Oh, God, no. No. But, again, so if you look at, you know, if you look at the American populace, we are more well-armed with small arms than any other country's military out there, and that includes our own.
Yeah.
We have more guns, more small arms per citizen than most countries do for their military. I think I think the average is like 2 to 3 per citizen, not per adult, per citizen of the U.S.
Yeah. Me and my buddies have had this conversation before. Of course, that's what the topic of the show was inspired by. But the topic came up. You can't invade the United States very easily, or at least most states in the United States. Some would fall, California, but
Oregon, Washington.
Most of them would be okay. One of them being West Virginia. You can't get APCs and tanks to West Virginia. You can barely get a Ford Focus through there.
Right?
Not only that, but could you imagine? Let's just take an example. Vietnam War. What was the big problem that we had in Vietnam? Terrain and guerrilla warfare. What does West Virginia have? Terrain. Guerrilla warfare. Could you imagine a group of Russian, Chinese, whatever soldiers storming through West Virginia? And this is what me and my buddy said. You just hear a sly little from a banjo.
You are fucked. In the literal and figurative sense
as
of the word.
As soon as you hear that, all hell breaks loose. As soon as those Russian soldiers hear that, it's you're done.
Yeah,
you're
like,
simply done.
I mean, you could invade the West Coast because it's more liberal.
You could invade the West because it's just easier and closer. To be honest, let's think about you know, flight prices and gas. You know, you just rush. You guys are right there. I'm just saying, if you guys are right there, if you want to, you can have them.
But just a little PSA
to Russia and China. If you guys want those states, go ahead, take them. Just stop around like Arizona, Texas.
We'll even give you
Nevada if you want. You can take Las Vegas. You know, we got Atlantic City and New Jersey. It's basically the same thing.
It's the same thing. We're good.
We got New York.
But once you get to New Mexico, Montana, Wyoming, and Idaho.
Yeah, that's just, it's not a word of warning. It's just a suggestion. I just stop around those states. The first view is going to be a breeze. You're like, wow, this is amazing. You might encounter some resistance. But, you know,
they would probably welcome you. They'd be like, come on.
They would give their guns to you that are completely useless because they have so many restrictions on them. They would give them to you. And you guys can take those states. But I'm just saying, once you hit Montana, Texas.
Oh, God. Lord help you if you get to the Midwest. Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas.
If you get to the terrain of the Midwest, honestly, northern Midwest in the wintertime, good luck with that.
They could try and come through, you know, like the middle to the south where it's a little warmer. However,
I wouldn't try with Alaska. I know it might seem closer and the easier target. You're not getting through Alaska because, let's be honest, there's not much there to take. So if you want to take it, go right ahead. I wouldn't advise it. The softest target, honestly, would be Southern California. My offer is free.
but then you get to those middle states.
Yeah.
If you get through the Midwest.
Then you got to worry about, this is the problem, you got to worry about the South and the East.
Oh, God.
And then you got, and just God forbid, if you get through those, you got to deal with the New Yorkers, you got to deal with Florida. Just saying.
You got to deal with the Northeast.
But let's
be honest, you're not, because
the Northeast is our silent shooters, okay? They may seem innocent up there with their Vermont cheeses and whatnot. They could mess you up.
But let's be honest.
Animals up there I don't dare to mess with.
As soon as you hit the West Coast, now you've got all these people in Texas, Arkansas, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Kentucky, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana that have been itching for a fight, that are pissed off anyway. And now
they prepare for this.
Yeah, and now you've just landed on American soil. Regardless if it's the West Coast, we can't stand the West Coast. But now you've landed on American soil. As much as we hate it, it's still ours. Now, not only do you have the American military to deal with, but now you have a bunch of gun-toting cowboys, rednecks, Southerners.
And now, Let's be honest, none of them are afraid to die, because they're going to die in 4 years anyway from obesity or cancer. So, they're not afraid.
They're not afraid to die, and they're not afraid to kill.
Most of them are so obese, it's going to take like half a mag. You're going to be spending through a lot of ammo to put them down. Not to mention the amount of crackheads. The amount of crackheads that you're going to have to choose through some ammo with. Good luck. And then you got to deal with the competent people who are sort of scared to die, but, you know, they're fairly accurate with a weapon. They're like, okay. And then you got to deal with the military.
Yeah. Yeah.
Simple as that.
Yeah. It's not a good thing. It's not a good idea to invade America.
Listen.
Because our civilian population will take out your military.
The Japanese learned a very harsh lesson in World War II. Let's not make that same lesson again, okay?
Yeah, let's not make it
again. Very heartbreaking for us. You know, I saw a meme. I don't know if you saw it. And it was of The Office, the show The Office. And it was basically Japan said, you didn't nuke Germany. And then the U.S. said, Germany didn't fuck with my boats.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was it a bit extreme? Of course.
But, I mean, it's just precaution. Don't fuck with America.
Well, first of all, let's just get this clear. You fuck with America. We get fucked with all the time. Don't touch our fucking boats.
Right?
We like our boats. We got a lot of them. Please don't touch them. We put a lot of unnecessary money into these freaking boats. Don't, because we have to pay taxes on those boats. Because if you destroy those boats, I got to pay more taxes to replace those boats. Don't touch those fucking boats.
Look, we kill each other for fun. What do you think we're going to do to you?
When you touch our taxpayer boats.
Right? Right?
Take the airplanes. We don't care about those. We crash those every other day.
They're a dime a dozen. Fuck them.
The boats.
But don't touch the boats.
The boats. We like the boats.
If you touch the boats, then you got to fuck with the Marines, Army, and Air Force. If you touch with the airplanes, all you got to do is just fuck with the Navy and the Air Force. Because the Army and the Marines are going to be laughing. You know, like, we can't shoot that.
Yeah, so the drones got exploded. Oh, are you going to do send another one? Well, sure. If you touch the boat. Oh, man. There's a special place in hell if you touch our boats. That's
right.
Technically my boat. Well, our boat. We paid for it.
Right? I paid for that shit. It's mine.
It may say USS whatever, United States whatever. You know, who is a citizen of the United States? Mwah. That is my boat.
I work. I pay taxes. My taxes pay for the boat. Therefore,
the boat.
Ergo, I own part of that boat.
Yeah.
Do you know what part I own? I own that tomahawk that's going to go straight up your ass.
I own that bolt right there on that boat.
Yeah.
You take that bolt out. If you take
that
bolt out, that's one less bolt that's holding the ship together. Don't touch my boat.
Don't touch the boat. All right.
Long story short. Oh, never mind. I thought we were close to ending the show. I saw four. I thought it said 4 minutes remaining. Not 14. My bad.
No, that's fine. There's one category I want to touch on that's probably pretty hard.
Like, shut up, Dad.
I mean, we could end the show.
The accuracy of space borders.
No, I'm not getting into that at all because, no.
I don't have enough information on SpaceX at the moment, sir.
Right.
Well, she's actually fairly inaccurate because, you know, I'm just fine.
So there's no air in space and the wings don't work very well?
Yeah.
No. So, like, older war movies, like Braveheart, Patriot, you know, movies like that.
Yeah, I think those are more important to get accurate because there's less information to go off of from that time period. Because we got the only, like, resources to pick from with those certain war movies, the sword and shield war movies, I'll call them.
Yeah.
Are the swords and shields that are sitting in museums. It's quite literally all we have. And, you know, some other
documents, but
yeah, we got documents and some things from that time period, but you can't have, you know, Mel Gibson running around with a katana and he's Scottish. Yeah. It's,
that would be hilarious though.
It would be hilarious. It's just not right. It wouldn't be correct.
Right.
Then there comes a point where, well, his claymore was actually such and such inches instead of such and such inches. Who gives a shit? It's a fucking claymore. Okay. He's got a big ass Scottish sword. Okay. It's from the time period. I don't care. Freedom. That's all you got to worry about. Claymore and freedom.
So Braveheart was one of those movies I wanted to bring up because there are a lot of inaccuracies in the movie. Mel Gibson took a lot of liberties with the story of William Wallace.
No, he's not.
Except for Passion of the Christ. That was pretty spot on.
I mean, it was.
There's a lot of research you can do from that one.
Well, yeah.
It's kind of hard to talk about it.
But so does the liberties that Mel Gibson took and the historical inaccuracies of Braveheart, does that make it a less enjoyable movie to watch?
Well, here's the thing. For Americans, no. We're like, okay, yeah, big battles. Yes. Let's see it. For the Scottish people and English people, I'm sure there's a lot wrong with that. Because it's like if an English person or a Scottish person made a movie about the American Revolution and told it they took a lot of liberties, and then we go and watch it and we're like, that's not what happened. George Washington didn't do that. This didn't happen. What do you mean?
He didn't come out with a hatchet and start killing people.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that are, that would be cool to see, but there's a lot of things about that that would be wrong, and I wouldn't say disrespectful, but just inconsiderate. And I think Mel Gibson was crossing, he was on that line of being inconsiderate, but then again, making those choices to make the movie enjoyable. And that was a war that happened years, way long ago. I'm sure the Scottish and English people really don't care. But it takes different strokes for different folks. We could watch it and be like, yeah, that's pretty cool. A sword battle. Yes. A historian from Scotland watches it and he's like, he could vomit watching it because it's just wrong. Who knows? With those sorts of, with the sword and shield wars, can kind of take liberty. Like with Troy, with Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
The story of Achilles. It was a mythical story, but it was half truth, half lies. There's not a bunch of resources to go from. And even back in those times, the story of Achilles was fluffed up anyway. So yeah, go for it. Fluff it up. Fluff. Give it all the fluff you need. But when you have the resources there and you choose to ignore them, it's kind of like, what the hell are you doing? You know?
Right. So, okay. So, I mean, we've got 9 minutes left. So, to basically sum up kind of what we've been talking about, one of the things that I look at, when I look at movies, and, you know, whether they're historic movies or, you know, non-historic movies, movies are our fables of this era in our evolution. You know,
and right now, we're the only ones that know the actual truth of them. 100 years from now, they can go back and watch American Sniper and be like, did that really happen? Was he really real? Like, he could be some kind of mythological guy, but then again, we have a lot of resources now that tell otherwise, or tell a truth of a story, so you never know. I think when time goes on and we go back, when people go back and look at these movies and argue, well, that wasn't historically accurate. We're the only ones that know what's historically accurate right now.
Right, right.
Back in World War II, the only people that could tell what was historically accurate were the World War II vets. Disappointingly, and very not disappointingly, I can't think of the word, most of them are gone at this point now. In World War I, same thing.
Yeah.
Historical accuracy only matters when you make it your priority. When you make it your priority and then you don't make it accurate, that's when it becomes a problem. But if it's a good story and you can at least put things from that time period in, go for it. Have fun.
I agree. And that's kind of the way that I see Braveheart. We all know that Braveheart was embellished a lot. But if we look at it, it's number one, it's Mel Gibson's take on the story, but it's a fable. It's meant to be embellished. It's meant to be over-exaggerated. It's a hero's tale, you know. And when we do movies like American Sniper, Lone Survivor, Men of Honor, who was, you know, which is the movie about the first, I can't remember his name right now, but the first black diver, who was also disabled. We look at these movies and we can sit there in our time period and say, oh, that's embellished, you know, that's historically inaccurate. But what we have to do as moviegoers, as cinephiles, we have to look at them as fables. You mentioned it earlier in the show, and you've mentioned it throughout the show. If you want something completely and totally historically accurate, watch a documentary.
Yeah, or go to a museum, or go do something that has to do with history.
Read a book.
And in the future, when they go back and look at our movies, when our movies, and we become history, when they go back and they're like, oh, well, that was blah, 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 go watch the documentary about it.
Yeah, movies are meant to be embellished a little bit. They are fables. They are stories. They are no different than what Aesop and Grimm, the Brothers Grimm, did.
Yeah.
You know, even if we take true stories and, you know, slightly alter them to fit the narrative of the story, that's exactly what it is it's a story. It's a fable. It is meant to entertain. It is meant to enlighten. It is meant to educate. And if we sit there and we nitpick all these movies for their historical inaccuracies, we're never going to enjoy the movie, and we're never going to get the message that the movie is trying to get across to us.
Yeah.
So, and that's my take on it. I'm a movie buff. I love movies. Yeah, I like catching little plot holes here and there because it might be fun, little Easter eggs here and there. But I can't sit there and completely and totally nitpick every single movie. I don't do that when we do movie of the week, you know, because I either enjoy the movie or I don't. I can't sit there and nitpick a movie or else I'll never enjoy it.
Yeah, I was just thinking 100, 200 years from now, somebody goes back and watches The Avengers. They're going to be like, wow, when did that happen? When did New York get destroyed?
When did the Battle of New York happen?
Why is it this taught in the history books? What the hell, man? Where's Tony Stark? What's all this Stark stuff?
All right, we are down to the last 3 minutes of the show. I want to thank Angel for coming on and being support in the studio.
Listen, I was doing my best not to, like, overtake conversation. That is not my show. I was exercising my reserve.
Well, we appreciate that. And as always, you know, Alex, thank you for joining us, joining me.
Yep.
Great show, as always.
Yeah.
And on that note, I want to say Sports Provider, Inspire, Police, and EMS. They're out there every day doing what they do.
Support your truckers.
Support your truckers, especially in Canada. And your farmers.
2022.
And as always, be safe, be smart. We want you back here every night for the broadcast. I'm with Curiosity Media. We love you guys. We truly do. Go hit up our Twitch channel, because eventually we are going to be changing over.
Well, I mean, we're there now.
Like, completely.
Yeah.
Like, going away from Blog Talk, completely.
But we are there now.
Over to Twitch. Yes, we are on Twitch. We love you guys. I hope you have a fantastic rest of your Wednesday night. Have a fantastic rest of your week. And we'll see you later.
Good night.
See ya. Good night. Thank you.